Hello and welcome to Combat Spuds, the weekly combat sports roundup brought to you by the Midweek Mash Tatty Sportscast. My name's Course Mick, and as always I'm joined by Harvey and Paul. How are we doing today, lads?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, man. Paul?
I'm also very good.
Nice.
I'm also very good, thank you. Buzzing for us. Buzzing for
us. Well, without any further ado, let's get on. We're going to kick it off today with a wee bit of news. And the first thing is to clear up a question mark for last week's episode. We spoke about the acrobatic MMA fighter Michel Pereira last week, about whether or not he was fighting.
That's right.
Because he was supposed to be fighting last week. And I was sure that I had read something about it, and it turns out I did. And I eventually found what was what. So there was a rumour that a chap called Philo was going to step in and replace Salikov, who had pulled out. That proved to be true, but because of COVID protocols and isolation periods, etc., they couldn't make the fight for last week. So it's happening this week instead on the UFC 270 pay-per-view.
Nice.
So Michel Pereira will be fighting. I don't actually know anything other than the fact this is his UFC debut. I don't know anything about Philo, so I guess we'll find it. Apparently in his last fight he beat an ex-UFC fighter, but you know, it doesn't tell as much about what to expect. So from what I can tell, he seems to favour striking. He's got a few knockouts in his record, so hopefully that stands us in good stead for a good fight, because Michel Pereira, he tends to be quite exciting to watch, to say the least. I don't even know what position on the card that's going to be. It looks like it's going to be somewhere in the prelims, but I've not seen a final lineup, so I'm not sure.
Having a wee bit of a streak as well, Pereira, three in a row. So is it maybe a wee fight to kind of tune him up, to send him up the kind of rankings, possibly?
He's at that sort of point where he's needing a win or two over sort of notable guys so that he can start then moving into top 15, top 10 and working his way through. He's one of these guys that walks the fine line because he's exciting style and the sort of high pace that he fights at. Either he wins and looks amazing, or he loses a decision badly, or loses by like a bad knockout or something like that, you know. It's like he doesn't really fight to win a decision at any
point. So he's not looking at percentages, you're saying.
He's always looking for style points. So that could and probably will cause him issues when he starts getting top 10 guys.
Does that suggest a lack of fight IQ though, mate?
Control.
Like, if he's so many losses on his kind of record.
I don't know. See, the thing is, I don't know if it's like 100% conscious choice to fight in a particular style, or if that's just sort of how he is and, you know, like how he's learned and how he expresses himself and whatever else. So I think it's probably just kind of ingrained in him. And I think if somebody that like to teach a very sort of traditional striking style was coaching him, and he listened to said coach, somebody like a Rafael Cordero or somebody like that, then what you might find is he stops winning so much, and he ends up just getting beat by decision, and maybe now and again he gets a stoppage or whatever, but because he'll lose that sort of something special.
Because that's what I always wonder about fighters like that are more kind of maverick, you obviously know more about MMA, Mick, and if you put yourself in the coach's position, put your wee coach's hat on, what are you trying to change about him? Are you trying to make his best bits better, or are you trying to round him? What would be your kind of take on him?
I would focus on having him hammer home the fundamentals and making sure that he's controlling a fight and he's gauging distance properly before he then starts incorporating his sort of acrobatic
stuff.
Don't start throwing flying kicks and stuff for the bell. Like, come in, establish your distance, use your jab, use your kicks, see what the guy's bringing to the table and how he's approaching it, and then as it makes sense, then start flinging in the other stuff, because some of the stuff that he does is brilliant for keeping a guy guessing.
I mean, he's so great the, fun.
The,
long,
the longer he's just in and out, left and right, pumping jabs and low kicks, then the more the guys, the opponent gets comfortable and starts mixing up his game. Whereas if he does his thing and starts flipping about and throwing flying kicks, then the guy's guessing and he's got no idea what to do, because he's feared that as soon as he, you know, makes a move, he's going to get a backflip, round off, and
some ridiculous
tornado kick, something or other.
Some extreme fighting, essentially. That's always what I wonder before with him. Like, if you're a coach, are you tearing your hair out watching him do things like that for the first bell? Or are you encouraging that? Like, as it's, you wonder if even so he knows what he's going to do going into the fight. Like, he must get into the cage thinking, I wonder what I'll do here. Like,
well, I mean, some guys, I'd imagine he probably is like that, because some guys, especially the kind of creative guys, they're like that. A good example is John Jones from his early fights. John Jones later, when he started getting out of trouble and all the rest of it, he had sort of settled down in terms of his fighting style, and he would be really methodical. But if you look at his first sort of 10, 15 fights, his career, he would go in there and just sort of see what the opponent did, and then he would just make it up on the spot. Like, he wouldn't go in with a game plan. He would just try things and see what worked. Like the way a lot of guys would do in sparring. Somebody like him does it in a fight, and I think Michel Pereira's probably very similar. Like, he'll probably fight very technically in a sparring situation, because he's trying to learn stuff, and then he'll go into a fight and just mess about. He seems like that kind of character.
No, I think somebody like Michel Pereira, he's very flamboyant, and as a coach, the coaches might have a game plan, but then he just goes in there and just flying his elbows and that, and it throws a fighter off his game, because you never know what's coming next. Is it got to be an elbow? Is it got to be a flying knee? Spring off the cage? Superman punch, you know what I mean? Head kick, look like anything. So, he probably does have a game plan, but then when he gets into the fight, he's just like, fuck it, we'll stay whatever. And it does work for him. He's the type of person, it's like go hard or go home type of thing, you know what I mean?
It's a give-take relationship sort of thing. Creativity in a fighting situation, creativity and technical ability can function together, but it's hard to do both at the same time. You know, it's a bit of this and a bit of that. I think as much as what he does keeps his opponents guessing, he's probably guessing himself. It's just like, fuck it, flying roundhouse.
Oh boy.
And I'm sorry to keep bringing on about this, but is it possibly to do with the fact that he's trying to aim for performance of the nights?
That is another option.
Because he's low down the card, he's not making a lot anyway. So, I mean, he gets a performance of the night or a highlight of the night, real, like, that's doubling his purse, maybe even, like, could it be something like that, where he's at a stage where he's just thought, why no, because I'm not going to get in contention anytime soon.
What I would say is, on that one, time will tell. If he starts fighting ranked guys and his style changes, and he starts focusing on good game plans and winning decisions, then we know that it was a conscious decision the whole time, and he was just trying to make the bonuses and make a name for himself. But if he continues that style right the way through and keeps winning and stuff, then the likelihood is it's just...
he's an absolute maverick.
Sort of how he fights for whatever reason. Right. The next thing I've got for us is a wee announcement. I'll attempt to say his name, but I'll probably say it wrong. I'm never confident saying it. Chatri Sitiotong. Something like that. He's the CEO of One FC. He was recently doing an interview and made some announcements. He was on the MMA Hour show, podcast, whatever it is. And he was talking about some upcoming win shows. So on February the 11th, they're going to have One Championship Bad Blood. And we'll see on there the bantamweight champion Bibiano Fernandez defending his title against former UFC standout John Lineker, Hands of Stone. John Lineker, he's a guy that was like a kind of perennial contender at 125 pounds flyweight in the UFC. He's been on a bit of a tear since he left the UFC, and he's been doing very well over in one. I think he's won three in the trot, with two or three of them been knockouts kind of thing. So he's getting the title shot on February the 11th. And then on March the 26th, they have rebooked 1X. So this is the card that was supposed to be happening back in December.
Ah, right. So
the 10-year anniversary thing.
This is where Mighty Mouse and the Kickboxer.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. So the main event will be Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson versus Rod Tang, the Thai boxer. So that's the special rules match where it's 4 rounds, 3 minutes per round. First round Thai boxing, second round MMA, repeat for the next 2 rounds. So that will be very interesting. There will also be two title fights on that card. Angela Lee will be defending her atomweight title against Stamp Fairtex, and the flyweight title will be on the line. It'll be Adriano Moraes defending against Yuya Wakamatsu. They're both slated to be taking place at the Singapore Indoor Stadium. So I think that's part of why they held off. They wanted to use the indoor stadium,
the big arena
in Singapore. The big arena. And I think due to the COVID rules over there, they could still hold fights, but I think they had to, I don't know if it was like no fans or smaller places with less fans, I'm not sure what the rules were, but they wanted to wait until they knew they could get the big show for 1X. So March the 26th, that's going to be happening. So it's not that far away, just touch over to Cullerman. So I'm very, very interested to see what happens with the Demetrius Johnson fight. Something really different.
Absolutely. Especially if it's this guy who's a phenom at kickboxing. Well, Thai boxing, sorry.
Aye. Rod Tang's basically got 3 minutes to show what he can do and kind of go for blood against DJ. And then if he doesn't get it done, then Demetrius Johnson's got 3 minutes to show what he can do. And I dare say, if it goes to that second round, I could be wrong, maybe Demetrius Johnson goes in with a plan to just strike with him for the full time, but I'd imagine if it goes to the second round, DJ goes for a takedown.
I think any MMA man worth his salt is going to drag a Thai boxer into the deep war with the ground game, isn't he?
Yep.
Even though that's not specifically his kind of game, is it, Demetrius? So is it? He likes to mix it up.
What did they call it? They gave it a computer game type name. The Mighty Bar or something. They cried.
The Mighty Bar.
Something like that.
The thing where he gets the guys back and then does a kind of belly to back suplex type thing. Sort of lifts them up, kicks the legs away. And as they're going down, he switches his grip and jumps into an armbar.
Fucking epic.
Have you seen this, Paul? No,
I've no. I've seen something like it in pro wrestling, so I've like, but I've never seen it in an MMA cage. No, sounds the business.
When you see him do it in training, it's wild. But see when you see him in the fight day, oh my god, world class, man! It's absolutely world class.
When I was watching that fight live, and when I saw that, I was in shock, like more so than you'd be with a massive knockout. I was stunned that was a real thing that just happened.
Oh, I've currently sourced it on the internet. That is, in fact,
you got it, man.
Yeah, 4 years ago at UFC 216. That is fantastic. Right. That is brilliant.
Are you on YouTube?
Yes. Yeah.
What's the name of the
impressive
video?
Impressive finish from Mighty Mouse at UFC 216.
Impressive is an understatement.
Right, there you go. If anybody wants to see it, that's what to look up.
That is in 127 seconds. It literally is him lifting him up in the up in the suplex and doing a jumping transition. As it reminds me of the RKO to Shinsuke Nakamura in WWE. He did that. He transitioned an RKO into an armbar. Cool as hell. Obviously not real though. Not as real as UFC. That was the first thing I thought when I seen it, when I heard you describing it. I was like, Nakamura. Straight back to pro wrestling.
So DJ's got stuff like that in his arsenal.
Yep.
He's a good wrestler. He's a very well trained grappler. When it once it's on the deck, he's very good with submissions. So, and he's like consummate professional. He always goes in with a really sound game plan. So, I think what he'll probably look to do is test himself in the first round and see if he can truly hang with an elite striker. And assuming he doesn't get knocked out, he'll just do whatever he needs to do to win in the second round, I think.
Aye. We talked about it before, didn't we? So.
I'm sure we did speak about it before the
lead up to when it was supposed to be happening.
I think that you'll take him down in the second round, and bar that, if it goes to the third round, then I think Mighty Mouse will be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Should be interesting.
It'll be very interesting
indeed. Right, another wee bit of news this time coming for the UFC. We've got some fight announcements. So Max Holloway recently announced that he had to pull out of his trilogy fight, arguably the most interesting trilogy in the history of UFC. He was supposed to be taking on Alexander Volkanovski for the featherweight title for the third time, even though, technically speaking, he's lost the first two fights. So very, very rare that this would go to a third fight. But due to Max Holloway's record at featherweight, he's sort of known as the best ever featherweight, widely regarded as the best ever featherweight. He's also been on a tear since the second fight, which was an immediate rematch. And in addition, Volkanovski's kind of fought the other guys that were sort of worthy of a title shot at the time, so it just kind of made sense to make that fight again. The other thing being that although Volkanovski, you know, it was fairly clear that he won the first fight, it was a close decision, but it was, you know, it was very fair to say that it was Volkanovski's fight. The second fight was contentious. I personally believed that Max Holloway should have got the decision, and a lot of other people did as well. I believe the global scorecard on Verdict MMA, that app I've spoken about a few times. I believe the global vote went very slightly to Max Holloway. It was a really, really close fight. A draw would probably have been a fairer way to go. But I think Max Holloway tipped it. Anyway, Volkanovski got the nod, so technically speaking, he's won both of the fights. But if the trend continues where Max Holloway's making improvements fight to fight, then, you know, this would have been a very intriguing matchup. But we won't know because Max Holloway, for undisclosed reasons, has had to pull out of that fight. So none other than the Korean Zombie, Chang Sung Jung, is going to step up and he's taking the fight. So this is at UFC 273 in April. So it's still, you know, like 3 months away, or just under 3 months. So it's kind of curious with Holloway pulling out when the fight's still that far away.
It must be a long-term injury if he's pulling out so far away.
I was going to say, it must be like a serious to semi-serious injury if he's...
There's a conspiracy doing the rounds that Max Holloway and Conor McGregor have got a verbal agreement to have a fight later in the year. Once McGregor's ready to come back.
Right.
And that Holloway's sort of starting training now so that he's ready to, because they'll fight at lightweight, so Max Holloway will need to be fighting up a class.
He'd want to
bulk up and be ready for that weight. So I'm no putting any weight behind that whatsoever, but it's something that's floating around on the internet that's potentially why. But it was definitely put across to the media that Holloway had pulled out from the fight as opposed to the UFC have decided to go another way kind of thing. So we'll see what happens there.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's April the 9th. They've not got a location or anything for the fight just yet, but UFC 273 on the 9th of April. The bantamweight unification between Peter Yan, who's currently the interim champion, and Aljamain Sterling, who's the questionable champion, let's say.
We've got a good Joe
that,
here.
That's going to serve as the co-main event on that April card. So that one's going to be very much anticipated to see what happens. Can Peter Yan stay within the rules? Can Aljamain Sterling make it to the end of the fight? These are the questions.
Is Peter Yan still over the Russian mafia?
Cannot wait for Peter Yan to cut Macho Man Randy Savage promos on Twitter again. Cup of coffee, Aljamain.
Does Peter Yan still owe the Russian mafia? Paid his debt off?
Well, I don't know if his debt's been paid or no. I guess we'll find out if he does anything else dodgy.
Oh, boy.
Stay tuned after these messages.
The final one is the grudge match that we didn't know we needed between Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington.
Boy.
Appears to be a done deal. They're looking at doing that as the headlining bout for UFC 272 on the 5th of March. T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. So these are two guys that used to train together at ATT?
American Top Team,
right?
They were both American Top Team men.
Obviously, Colby Covington decided to create a pro wrestling style gimmick. alienated everybody around him.
Right.
And eventually was kicked off the team, so he now trains elsewhere. And him and Masvidal have been going at it on social media since, pretty much.
Yeah.
So both of them coming off losses to Usman. Both of their last fights were title shots against Usman. So, you know what I mean? It's like, they're both big names, but there's no that much else they can do in that division right now. Leon Edwards is going to fight for the title next against Kamaru Usman.
Right.
Nobody else is really kicking about there that makes sense to fight them. So the timing's right.
This is about as pro wrestling as an MMA contest gets with these two. You've got your Dressing Goon wearing Shaggery, a man with a shade zone in one corner, and you've got your MAGA guy in the other corner that's sealing it up. I can't wait for this. It's going to be great fun.
Not to mention the Dressing Goon wearer has the BMF title.
He literally has a separate title. That is the most pro wrestling thing ever. It's like the $1 million belt. But instead of the $1 million man laughing at him, it's just fucking Dana White loving life because of the money he's making off of this guy that's not even a title contender, really.
Do you know the thing? It's a terrible, terrible matchup for Jorge Masvidal.
Is it really? Is this really? Oh, I suppose he's going to win.
Colby Covington's a decent striker who can wrestle his arse off.
Masvidal's pretty one-dimensional, isn't he, really?
He can grapple. He's very experienced. But he's a striker.
He's a street fighter by nature, isn't he, man? He's not going to want to go to the ground.
He's a Cuban-blooded just thug, man, just street warrior.
Mm-hmm. On his side, however, is that Covington has a character to play and he will not want to. He'll be getting to the shoot for a takedown if you're a bitch partner and all that again.
I think that Covington will probably look to strike a lot.
I don't
think he'll come in and just wrestle, but Masvidal's going to have his hands full.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be good fun.
I hope Covington gets his face panned in. That's what I hope.
The build up to it will be hilarious, man. The fight itself, they'll probably be talking to one another during the fight.
I expect it's a win for that. Barn burner full of stuff.
If there's any WrestleMash fans that just listen to this just for the sake of it, and you're not actually that into MMA or whatever, this is probably a fight that's worth checking out, man.
Yeah.
If a pro wrestling fan's going to get into MMA, this is the fight to do.
Speaking as a pro wrestling fan myself, and I always look for the pro wrestling in the rest of the world, this is as pro wrestling as it comes for MMA. It really is. It's going to be good fun. Hey, Covington will even come out to cut Angle's music, man. It'll be a great laugh. He's done that before, has he not?
Aye, he has.
Epic, man. What a guy.
Do do do.
Some people say arsehole, I say playing a heel to perfection. Anyway, sorry, Mick.
Right, so let's have a wee look at last week's, this week, just weekend there for us, but last week's UFC card, the first UFC card of the year, in fact. It was UFC Vegas 46, is what they were crying it. It's basically a fight night event. Mm-hmm. UFC Vegas 46, Cater versus Chikadze. Did yous catch any of the fights?
I have seen the kind of performance of the night kind of stuff, so I have to be honest. The kind of bigger stuff.
Okay.
I've just seen a few highlights and that's all, really.
Seen some highlights, okay. I'll run through the results quickly and then we'll pick out a couple of fights to talk about. So, starting with the prelims. We had TJ Brown defeating Charles Rosa. We had Brian Kelleher defeating Kevin Krum. We had Court McGee defeating Ramiz Bramina. I can't remember how you say his name. Brahim, I think it was
Brahima, something like that.
Oh, they were pronouncing the J like an S or an R. I can't quite remember now. Brahimus, I think they were saying. Anyway,
my apologies, Ramiz. Spuds, we have a pronunciation 5 minutes.
Jamie Pickett picking up the win over Joseph Holmes. Bill Algeo defeating Joderson Brito. Do you remember I was having a bother with that?
Joe Anderson. I remember.
Transpires, the guy's Brazilian. So
aye.
That gives a wee bit of weight to why it's
that name.
That's apparently a Brazilian name, aye. Joe Anderson. We had Vyacheslav Borshev taking the win over Dakota Bush. Caitlin Chikagian defeating Jennifer Maia. Brandon Royal defeating Rogério Bontorin, something like that. Jake Collier defeating Chase Sherman. And in the main event, Kelvin Kattar picking up the dominant win, or the surprisingly dominant win, over Giga Chikadze.
Mm-hmm. Wow, man.
What caught the attention of you guys? How was about that? Let's start with that.
Big guy with a submission.
Big guy with a submission. That'd be Jake Collier defeating Chase Sherman.
Yes, sir.
Heavyweights.
That one was like a bully beatdown. So it was. Mm-hmm. It was fairly competitive on the feet, and then it hit the deck, and Jake Collier just go on top of Chase Sherman, managed to get the full mount, and Chase Sherman could do nothing about it, mm-hmm. and Collier just beat the shit.
It was a bit of schooling when it hit
until
the ground,
he rolled over. Eventually, Chase Sherman just rolled over and basically gave up. He let him choke him.
He was getting a beat, then he rolled over, trying to get away, and then he was like, no, wrong decision. No. Bye.
it was like the kind of meme noise with it. Nope. Oh, God. Stopped for a second. Nope. That was it. I kind of looked for the three fights that were all the bonus fights. Borshev's body shot, I loved, man.
Aye, it was a peach.
Absolutely. That's crumbled him.
That's a fight that everybody should go back and watch. That was a very
good. You heard the noise
fight
of that fella when he got hit, where he go, ugh, like he just started, game over.
It was a really good fight, man. Bush had his moments, but Borshev, he's like one of the kind of standout strikers. I had read that he had good kickboxing, but I wasn't expecting that, man.
That hit the button, man. Absolutely clinical.
And as you say, that body shot was like, that was the perfect liver shot, man.
Yeah, aye.
That turned his inside a different colour.
Just totally and utterly switched them off, man. The boy was paid before the grounding powder even started. Like, the ref would have been as well saying, done. He wasn't coming back up, man. I loved the main event. No, mate, the main event was great fun. So it was.
Die. For that was really interesting.
That Carter was the winner, clearly, but that Chikadze guy's a zombie, man. He just walked through so much hell.
Quit.
Aye. His face was a mess, man.
First main event of the year, and it's a fight of the year contender straight away.
Oh, my.
It was
goodness,
really
man.
Good. Really good fight. It was interesting because Chikadze, in the first minute or two, looked mm-hmm. like he was going to absolutely walk through Calvin Kattar. He was faster. He was hitting harder. He was he was landing with a higher percentage.
He started really well.
He looked the man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he threw a head kick and slipped.
Yeah.
And Calvin Kattar jumped on him like something out of a horror movie.
Oh, he
sprung on his back and just attached himself to him.
Yeah.
And for the rest of the round, it was just ground control and ground and pound. And from there, Chikadze was breathing out his arse.
I feel like that's what happened. He emptied his tank trying to escape there, didn't he?
Aye.
Coming
into the second round, he was a wee bit more reserved because he was worried about takedowns. Because he was like, shit, I've just lost that round because I couldn't get back up. Don't want to get taken down again. He wasn't exploding as much. He wasn't moving forward quite as much. And then on top of that, he got fairly tired in that first round with the grappling. And then that just multiplied as the fight went on.
Kattar's elbows were beautiful at times, but he had a spinning back elbow round the corner, mm-hmm. man. That just connected flush, mm-hmm. man. He was very impressive. Like, I've never heard of that.
Kattar. That elbow in the second round nearly put Chikadze away.
Oh God, man!
He stepped in with a jab, ducked under a punch, and then rolled his shoulders up and over.
I love that.
It was a thing of beauty.
Aye, just
very similar to the way I think it was Andre Feely mm-hmm. that did it against the Korean Zombie a couple of years ago.
Yes, because that was at the end of your fight, wasn't it?
The last second of your fight. Aye.
That mm-hmm. was exactly the same. The shoulder roll round the back, man.
Yep. Can I? Upward, backwards elbow thing.
Aye, but the timing was just so perfect, man.
Yep.
And it's amazing. I mean, I'm amazed the guy lasted five rounds to a decision. He's took years off his life for that. He really has, man. Because his face was like a pizza.
Do you know what it was like? What's showing Hey You Guys? Monster
Sloth. Sloth
for telling.
Something like that. He really was swollen and everything,
man. He was in a bad way, man. He was a pizza without cheese, man. He was in a bad night.
Tell you something that surprised me that I only learned afterwards. Caitlin Chikagian and Jennifer Meyer. I picked that one as going to be a good fight, and it was. That was a very good back and forth fight. Chikagian picking up the decision, right? Caitlin Chikagian was the last fight in her UFC contract, right? She's a top 10 perennial contender, kind of like the best of the rest sort of thing. Like, she's no as good as like Shevchenko and the sort of top women, but she's always been number one, number two. I say always. For the last like 3 years, she's been number one or number two in the 125 pound division. But she was told by the UFC, so they realised that coming towards this fight, that this was the last fight in her contract, and that they hadn't been approached by the UFC to renegotiate mm-hmm. the contract. The UFC, generally speaking, will look to renegotiate with a fighter, assuming they're keen to keep them on, before their final fight in their contract, because the UFC's got the most leverage power then, the most power in the negotiations. If a fighter wins the last fight and their contract looks very, very good, they can then go and take offers. They're out of contract after that, so they can go and take offers for other promotions, obviously while they're still under contract, they can't. So that can lead to a situation where the UFC's got to try and match an offer for elsewhere. But Chikagian was told by the UFC matchmakers that they didn't want to negotiate. They wanted her to take the last fight in her deal, which is a very interesting position to be in. So she's came in and she's performed and she's won the fight, but she's now out of her contract, and it's kind of, she said in an interview afterwards that she wants to remain with the UFC, but she now has the ability, if the UFC comes with an offer that she's maybe not too happy with, she has the ability to go
around her,
see what else she can get. It's a very strange position.
Very, very strange.
Weird that the UFC's let that happen.
It's weird that they've let that happen, to be honest, because they've just gave her all the leverage, and usually they want to have the leverage. You know, she's a, as you say, top of the card fighter, pushing for a title shot, and now she can go elsewhere and take offers. Just won a fight very well.
I don't know, go into something with poor leverage effectively, which is they currently have no real leverage over her. Like, she can effectively, if UFC offer doesn't appeal to her, there's PFL, there's Bellator. Mm-hmm. Like, there's enough out there for her.
It's not like she's somebody that's kind of, you know, hovering around top 15. Like, she's good, she's one of the best in the world, but she's she's not quite a top 10, top 5. You know what I mean? Then she'll go and she'll probably get a contract somewhere else, but she's not a world beater. But no, this is somebody that's probably a world champion if Shevchenko's not there.
Aye.
You know what I mean? Like, she goes to Bellator, she goes to PFL or somewhere, she's probably going to be the champ, or she's at the very least, she's going to very quickly be finding herself in a title shot.
Well, there is a question in itself, is if you're her, do you go to PFL due to the fact that if she's champ there, what is it, like $1 million a year effectively? Yeah.
If you win the tournament, it's $1 million.
If you win the tournament, it's $1 million. And if she backs herself, then why not? Because that's probably more than she's going to make in the UFC.
So the decision, because of the way the market is, the decision for her is accolades versus rewards, accolades versus money.
Mm-hmm.
Does she want to go and secure her family's future? If so, then absolutely go and find the PFL.
Aye.
If she's confident she can win that tournament, and she should be, then absolutely go there. But if it's accolades and legacy, there's no really.
It's crazy to me, man. It's crazy that we're sitting here and we're talking about if she wants to secure her family's future, she should go and fight elsewhere, like in the PFL and that. Like, it's weird that that she has to leave the UFC, which is the biggest MMA promotion. In the world, you know what I mean? She shouldn't have to leave there to secure her family's future. She should be able to fight there. You know what I mean?
It's weird. Yeah,
it's just these guys, they should be getting paid more, man. They're out there,
100%,
taking beatings.
Man.
They're training every day, you know, and then fighting 3-4 times a year. Do you know what I mean? So they should get paid more.
They're literally risking their life whenever they have a fight.
Exactly, man. Look at the amount of people that...
Things can go tits up in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
Look how many boxers over the years have died through brain trauma for a fight? You know what I mean? It's like a high number, well higher than it should be.
Yep. I think about the folk who just get struggle later on in life. Do you know what I mean? Brain,
Alzheimer's,
exactly,
stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That. But you know, you can say what you want about, you know, sort of pro MMA guys will probably say that because of the options in MMA, it's no just punching. Like in boxing, you can punch the body or the head, that's all you can do. Whereas in MMA, you can also attack the legs or you can grapple, etc. So, on average, MMA fighters take less head strikes than boxers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they still take a lot of head trauma, in training and in fights. So you can guarantee that there are many guys and girls who in the years to come will develop some serious health issues due to their fighting career. Even just, do you know a good example? I'm sure I've spoke about him. In fact, I definitely did. I spoke about him last year sometime in the podcast. Mark Coleman, who's an absolute legend of the UFC and of MMA in general, he's now had both his hips replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not just because MMA... It's also because of a long wrestling career through high school, college, and I think he was in the national team and stuff before MMA. But he's now, you know, having won the heavyweight title in UFC and many other accolades, tournament champion and stuff, he's in a position where he had to do a GoFundMe or whatever other kind of crowdfunding thing it was to help pay his medical bills to get his hip replaced.
Aye.
Like, that somebody in his position of sort of legendary status shouldn't be having to do that. You know what I mean? No, they should be set for life. They should have healthcare for life and stuff like that.
Yep.
They shouldn't be having to do stuff like that, man. It's bloody mental.
Absolutely not. That's
crazy.
Not. Agreed. Agreed.
Anyway, let's crack along. UFC 270. Obviously, it's coming up on Saturday night. I was going to say it, and then I wasn't going to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's the biggest fight of the year, lads.
Bad joke.
We're only a few weeks in. It's the second card of the year, but
it was only a few weeks ago. It was last year.
So it's the heavyweight title unification bout in the headlining spot, Francis Ngannou versus Cyril Gann.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of broke down this card last week as part of last week's show, and we gave predictions for the main event. So not going to go too far into detail on this, but I do want to touch again mm-hmm. on the main event because of the sort of ever-developing Francis Ngannou situation. Basically, we're at a point where Ngannou's made it pretty clear mm-hmm. to anybody that will listen that the only way he's re-signing with the UFC, actually, let me preface this, right? So for anybody that's sort of missed what we're talking about, this is the last fight in Francis Ngannou's current contract. Mm-hmm. Unlike the Caitlin Chookagian situation, the UFC did want to renegotiate at one point.
Yeah.
Don't know when. Ngannou wanted to mm-hmm. fight out the contract because he wants to make sure that he gets the best deal. And he also wants to include boxing on his deal, right? So he's made it clear now that he isn't going to re-sign unless the UFC includes in his contract that he's allowed to take boxing fights.
Yeah.
Now, I've said to you guys, I don't know if I've said it publicly, I don't think the UFC will have that. I think mm-hmm. the only way the UFC puts boxing in his contract is if they have final control, final say over who he's fighting and when he's fighting and what the promotional terms are when it comes to boxing. They're going to want to co-promote, so they're going to want to have a mm-hmm. say over who they're co-promoting with, like whether it be Showtime or Golden Boy or whatever else, and what the percentage cuts between the companies are and stuff like that. They're going to want to control all this stuff mm-hmm. and protect their investment. The investment being Ngannou as their champion. So if Ngannou were to re-sign, it would not be a favourable deal for him in terms of his ability to move into boxing. He's not going to mm-hmm. go and take on Tyson Fury and make $10-20 million. It's not going to happen because the UFC are going to ensure that they're getting the best deal that mm-hmm. they can get, and the best deal that they can get is going to hurt the profits in Ngannou, the payout that he'll get. So I guess just in general, lads, what's your thoughts on the situation, and kind of what do you think is going to happen? Like let's assume that Ngannou wins, right? Just for the talk's sake of this argument, let's say Ngannou wins the fight on Saturday. What happens next?
Well, does that not leave him in the position where he has to remain in contract with the UFC because he's a sitting champion?
So basically, right, so that's a good point, Paul. There's a champions clause in UFC contracts. I don't think the full details of this clause have ever been made public, for obvious reasons. But basically, when someone wins a title fight in UFC,
mm-hmm.
If they have no more fights on their current contract, they will automatically be locked into a three-fight contract. I don't know whether that states that it'll be the existing rate of their previous contract or if the rate will be up for negotiation. I'm not sure. So, i.e., could they get paid more? I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Because there's my next question, Mike. Are you allowed to relinquish a title?
Well, that's the thing. So Ngannou's position is that
can he just say thanks but have it back?
His position that he spoke about publicly is that clause is only in effect if you're the champion. Now, he didn't say specifically, he didn't follow that up with another line, but what he's saying when he's saying that is that if he relinquishes the belt and he's no the champion, then the clause isn't effective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The UFC might want to take him to court and argue that. I don't know. Because it would be quite easy for a boxing promoter to market Francis mm-hmm. Ngannou as the current UFC heavyweight champion coming in to challenge, let's just say for hypothetical, that it's Tyson Fury. So they're doing world mm-hmm. champion heavyweight boxer, world champion MMA UFC fighter. That's going to sell big bucks. The UFC probably isn't going to be happy with that. And they're probably going to want to challenge that because technically speaking, Ngannou would have had to relinquish the title. So he's no technically speaking the current champion or whatever.
I don't think they need to market it that way though, mate. He's got name value in himself without a UFC champion.
I'm not saying they need to do that, but we're talking about boxing promoters.
Aye, well, I get that certainly. Aye, and they want to.
Aye, they could just promote him as a former UFC heavyweight champion.
Aye. Yeah.
Aye.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, if I was putting money on it right now, I'd say this is the last fight for Ngannou in the UFC. I've been thinking about this for about a week. I still think that's what's happening. Win or lose,
right.
I think Ngannou goes away in the boxes. I don't think he's going to get what he's looking for out of the UFC. He might try. It might be 3 months, 6 months, or back and forward negotiations. But based on UFC's previous from last year, when they, within a matter of three-ish months, made the decision to put Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis in an interim title fight, they don't care too much for Ngannou and his want for negotiations. So I don't think they give him too long to negotiate before they just say, do you know what, that's fine. We release you from your contract. On your way. The only problem that the UFC would have, assuming Ngannou wins, is that he's then beat Cyril Gane, who is like the next best thing. So then they've got the problem of who the hell do we have fight to crown a new champion? So that's a whole other discussion. But I mean, what do you think of that? Like, do you think Ngannou fights in the UFC again after this weekend?
I mean, the UFC could sign him to a contract that says you can have one boxing fight every 2 years or something, and then they could get free promotion off of it because it could be the boxing company will promote them.
As in one for Blimp Predictions, I will say that he wins and he leaves. And the boxing game gains a hell of a talent, which is a shame for UFC because surely this would benefit them as well.
Yep.
But as we know, that's not really the way they work.
They
like it being...
Yeah,
about the company and know the fighters.
I'm gonna fling out a hot take. I'm gonna fling out a controversial opinion. Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou for the WBO title. It's Tyson Fury's retirement fight.
Oh.
And it happens if not the end of this year, start of next year.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I'll be up for it.
God knows what happens, but that's my prediction. I think Ngannou's by the UFC because I don't think he gets the deal he's looking for. I don't think they value him high enough to give him it.
It would be great if he wins his last fight and then, again, gets on the mic with Joe Rogan and says, fuck you, UFC, fuck you, Dana White, you know, and then just, boom, drops the title in the middle of the body, in the middle of the ring, and then just walks away. How class is that?
Cut a promo on Tyson Fury, man.
Sprays WBA on the belt like NWO. Hulk Hogan.
Do you know, just think, man. Producer hat on. Think of the movie moment. He defends his title, right? He lays the title down in the middle of the ring like it's a line in the sand. He gets in the mic. He says, hold on, Joe Rogan, I've got this. He sticks his ginormous hand in Joe Rogan's face and pushes him to the side as he takes a mic.
Joe Rogan's face and
he cuts the promo of a lifetime in his broken English, right? And he states, UFC, you don't know what you've got. You don't value me. I'm done with you. Dana White, fuck you. Tyson Fury, watch yourself. I'm coming for that WBO title.
That'd be amazing, man. Oh, man.
Mic drop.
That'd be class.
I thought you were going down the Booker T road there. I was about to cover my ears.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
Sherry Martel in the background going, oh, no, no again.
Oh, God.
I'm bringing a terrible amount of wrestling pattern with this week, lads. So.
The MMA fan of me, the UFC fan of me, is crying out for the UFC to make a deal and make it quick. I don't want to see Ngannou leave the UFC. However, I 100% want to see what he can do in a boxing ring. And he's very keen to get in a boxing ring. So I wouldn't be too mad if we end up seeing him fighting some big names in boxing. The only thing I will say is that I don't want to see him anywhere near a fucking Thrillerverse show. Or, you know, I don't want to see him in
triad
combat nonsense or anything like that.
The triad. Fuck that.
You know I mean, this is a once in a time.
Once in a lifetime
athlete. So, like, let's treat him with the respect he deserves and put him in big fights. Let's not put him in stupid celebrity nonsense. Something I said to you, but I don't think I've said it in the podcast, or I might have mentioned it last year sometime. Dana White has spoken openly about being keen to start a boxing promotion that would run alongside the UFC. And he went as far as incorporating a company. I'm pretty sure it was called Zuffa Boxing. Obviously, I'm pretty sure he'd done that when Zuffa still owned UFC. So there's question marks there. But nevertheless, if there was ever a time where Dana White and all the UFC could launch a boxing promotion, now would be it. Now would 100% be it. With everything that's going on with Triller and all that nonsense, Showtime getting involved in the kind of celebrity side of things by signing Jake Paul. If they started a proper boxing promotion with Ngannou as the poster boy, heavyweight champion in both disciplines, like that's his goal, you've still got McGregor there who's got name value. You've got guys like Kamaru Usman who spoke openly about wanting to box. Kamaru Usman thinks he can hang with Canelo Alvarez. We don't need to talk about that, but just let that sink in for a second. So, like, there's a serious stack of money to be made if they want to go down that route.
Aye, but the UFC, they don't know do that because they want too much money and they boys will not do it, man. All the top fighters will go to somebody else and you'll be left with a riffraff.
Possibly. That is a potential issue. There's also the contractual aspect that many of the top names would be under contract with the boxing promoters, so it might be hard to bring them in. But that aside, I will be watching the fights very anxiously at the weekend to see what happens. I want Ngannou to win. I wouldn't be too surprised or too mad if Gan won, because he's a phenomenally talented guy. He's an amazing striker. But Ngannou is that sort of once in a lifetime character. Like, he's a special athlete, and I would hate to see him sort of wash out of the UFC. So I hope he wins. I hope he fights again in the UFC, but at the very least I hope to see him in big fights in the near future if he does sort of move on for the UFC. Anyway,
there's hope for old Derek Lewis to be champion still.
Can you imagine him as a champion? That's the man you want representing your promotion.
My balls is hot.
what a man he is. Right. I thought since this could potentially be the last fight for Francis Ngannou in the UFC, that it was only right that we pay homage to him in this week's fight from the archives.
Very fitting.
So, we are about to watch the UFC debut of Francis Ngannou.
Nice.
It's not a particularly long fight. It was a Let's just say it was a very impactful debut. He took on a man by the name of Luis Enrique, who is a rather large fellow with some heavy hands, and Francis Ngannou barely broke a sweat, as we're about to see. So this is a YouTube video from the UFC. It's one of their free fights. The video is titled UFC Debut, Francis Ngannou versus Luis Enrique, free fight. So if you find that, if you want to watch along with us, if you find that on the UFC YouTube channel, I'm going to start the video at 3 minutes and 30 seconds in, because it shows the sort of build up to the fight, shows some interviews and stuff. So I'm going to start at 3 minutes and 30 seconds in. If you let me know when you're ready, troops, I'll hit play.
Ready to go.
Okay, okay. Let me press play. Immediately. There we go. Right. So it's buffered. Okay. Pressing play. And 3, 2, 1, play. Now, you'll immediately notice that the commentators didn't know how to say his name at this point, which is hilarious. They were calling him Ngannou. Francis Ngannou.
First thing I immediately noticed was the ring card girl. Shout out to the ring girls. You did a great job.
Get all Bruce Buffer.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I think they thought it was like a silent N or something.
I feel like it's a common thing in MMA at all levels is to mispronounce names, isn't it?
It's a done thing, actually.
You just took a stab at it, didn't you, man? That Brazilian boy is genuinely a fucking lump, isn't he? My God. That is a big guy. Oh, aye.
Orlando, Florida. You might also notice that we're hearing the sultry tones of the one Mike Goldberg, the former vice of the Octagon.
Former
vice of the Octagon.
You're just putting a wee bit of spice on your part of there.
Aye.
Hey, bye.
So, at this point in his career, Ngannou was very excitable, let's say. His striking wasn't quite as refined as it is now, and he didn't really sort of stalk his opponents and use ring control and pick his shots. He just kind of walked forward and threw sledgehammers.
He
also wasn't particularly adept at wrestling and the like.
Disney. Nah, he doesn't like it.
It's not like being on the ground then. No. Really is not enjoying it.
So we're like a minute in, and Enrique's already realised, I don't want to punch with that guy. So he's turning him down.
You can definitely. You can tell. You can tell he doesn't.
Ngannou pretty much doesn't quite know what to do here. He's trying to create space. He's kicking at the knees now, but I don't think he knows how to get up properly.
No, I don't think so.
Just shows you the amount of improvement in the guy.
Oh, aye.
He's improved so much since then, man.
He looks like just a hard guy that's decided to have a crack at this.
I think I said one time the only thing scarier than Francis Ngannou is Francis Ngannou that knows what he's doing, like a complete fighter, you know what I mean?
Terrible comparison, but it reminds me of Kimbo Slice, man.
Oh, God.
I'm just like, oh, watch this guy's horns. The minute he's in his back, he's like, the minute he's in his back, he's like an upturned turtle. Wrong bang forward in his shell. I've done him seriously dirty.
Oh, aye.
What I would say, though,
did not improve.
See, if we take it a wee bit more serious for a second, Enrique's only just managed to pass the half guard. So even though Ngannou didn't quite know what he was doing, he's strong enough and athletic enough to keep the full guard all that time.
Just a monster.
I mean, for the neck down, man, that's still Ngannou, but for the heat, for the neck upwards, who is that guy? I swear that's no him. It's just somebody wearing a different face.
Yeah, Joe Rogan with Ngannou.
I just can't. I cannot get used to that hair and the nae beard, man. He looks like a jacked up Anderson from Man United back in the day.
Oh God.
Aye, man, it's like Anderson's building the weights, man.
That's like comic book muscles, isn't it?
Aye.
Balloon muscles.
So ridiculous. It's like your cheeky Nando's guys, but there's actual muscle in there, not just water retention. What's the pronunciation, Vlad? Pull it up, Jamie. Ah, oh, shit, wrong show. Jamie ain't here, Joe.
Well, you would think that they would at least, being a big UFC, the commentators would know how to pronounce his name. Like, ask somebody, like, how to pronounce his name.
I don't think Ngannou could speak a lick of English at this point, so he was maybe exempt for media days and stuff. I don't actually remember possibly if he took part in interviews and all the rest of it.
Ah, but surely somebody would have been able to, like, say that this is how you pronounce his name.
Surely they've got a French speaking translator that says, "Here, Frank, how do you pronounce that second name, Frank, mate?" And he's like, "Oh, it's sound, mate, it's Ngannou, bud." I'm obviously I'm paraphrasing how they're speaking French.
Yeah, that's a big fella.
Yeah, aye, no worries, mate. Aye, cheers, bud. Mind how you go. Oh, fuck, aye, all day.
So, right, Luke, I hope you saw that and took that in, man. So, Enrique charges forward. Ngannou, his footwork was terrible. His hands were all out of the place. And he just happened to clip him with a kind of flailing arm.
He was
and
Enrique nearly knocked out there.
Aye.
Spun
him for a loop, a wee tad.
At this point, Francis is frustrated and seriously tired.
Get out.
And I think he's about to get a talking to. And Ricky's probably feeling fairly confident at this point, all in the fact he knows that he can't take too many of them punches.
I mean, inside his head, he's thinking, if I stick with this guy, I've got to beat him. I just need to no get in the road of the boulders that are hanging off the edge of his wrist. Because they are boulders. Even then. Like even the way he throws a kick and that gets caught, it's so telegraphed. Like he was so, he just had so little kind of proper skill set going in, man.
Here's the replay when he's charging, and he just clips him with that right hand, man. Now, Francis Ngannou, motivated. I know he had to grapple. Determined that he's not going to the ground again. Enrique thinking, don't hit me again, don't hit me again.
Keep moving. This fucker's going to tire. I mean, we're saying it like he's a wee guy. He is a massive big man as well.
He's a unit, he is. Against anybody else, he'd be the bigger guy. There's very few fighters in the UFC bigger than that guy.
His weight's just perhaps distributed a bit less favourably than Ngannou. Like, unfortunately, there's definitely a bit of fear in that boy. Like he knows what's coming. If
he's hesitant,
Here
we go. Ngannou, he's smelling the fear. He's smelling blood.
Aye, there's definitely fear.
Knee up the middle. He's trying to clinch, but he doesn't quite care what to do. His arms are in the wrong position for a tie clinch.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to defend a double leg here, and he's only kind of half get the position right. He's got an underhook and he's pulling up, but he's not pushing the head down or anything. So, like, he's you can tell he's very young in terms of like MMA experience at this point.
It's funny that the 22-year-old's the seasoned kind of pro, and the 29-year-old's the new guy here. Like,
aye,
like, he was 29 when he debuted. Like, it's mad how late he started.
But why? He went within the space of, is it 6 years? I think it's within the space of 6 years, 5 or 6 years. I think it's 5 years actually. He went from no experience, like never fought professionally, to fighting for the UFC heavyweight title, which is basically unheard of, man.
Aye. Wild.
In a modern era, that's unheard of. Back in the day, you'd maybe get a high level wrestler come in and very quickly, through just taking guys down and stuff, get work his way up, but no. No martial arts experience to fighting for a world title in such a short space of time is insane.
Enrique's
not looking clever anymore.
He's determined. He's no striking when guy anymore.
He doesn't know what. He doesn't know what to strike him.
Yep.
Can't handle it.
Tungano is landing now. He's picking his shots a bit better.
And boom.
There goes the lights.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Now just wait for the replay of that strike. That looked like a very impactful uppercut, but just wait for the replay.
You can see when it's slow motion.
Till you see the replay for the other angle, man. I don't know.
I think the joys of the internet means we're all slightly differently coming in.
Aye.
Oh,
yeah. Here we go. Right, this isn't the angle. So it's the one after this. But even this one will show you because it's a slow motion, but the other one's better. Here we go. Oh, this is it.
What, like, oh, God.
Ka-dunk. Look at the way his head moves.
Lights out.
That is like the emergence of one of the sort of all-time greats, man. That Ngannou's going to go down as a massive legend. He's a freak.
Aye, like, sure.
An absolute standout. He's a once in a lifetime athlete.
Oh man.
Aye. His power is just ungodly, man. Insane.
Insane in the membrane.
Yep. Insane in the membrane.
Insane in the brain.
So
good.
I think we shall end at the air trips, what do we think?
Aye.
Yes.
Okay, well, I think we're all looking forward to seeing what happens at the weekend.
You're damn right.
So, all the best to both fighters, but I'm absolutely rooting for Ngannou, I've got to say.
Aye, I'll be watching it. I think I'll go to the pub, hopefully. I'm no steaming, and I can remember it.
You're at the supreme fortune that it's not going to be crazy late for you as well with your time.
Aye, that's good.
I might just have to do a... either stay up and watch it or do a strategic sleep, which is a very dangerous thing for me to do.
Just drink some...
I'm really good at them. Some tendency to just sleep.
Just drink some Red Bull, man. Some
strategically going to be sleeping to the morning.
I had a can of Monster the other night. We went to the cinema to see Spider-Man. shout out to Spider-Man, by the way. That new Spider-Man movie was really good. But I had a can of Monster when I went to see that, and I was up to I don't know what time. That's not the best idea either.
How about
I'll end up just doing an all-nighter.
A macho man cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah, brother.
Wow.
Oh dear. Right. On that note, if you have been, thank you very much for listening. Please do check us out on our socials. And if you only do one thing for us, recommend us to a friend or a family member. Spread the word.
Yeah.
And let's make this a year of the mashed tatty.
Aye.
I've been Mick, they've been Hardman Paul. Peace out.
Bye, driver.
Do your talking while you're walking.
Yeah, brother. Bye, driver.